America will reclaim its rightful place as the greatest, most powerful, most respected nation on earth, inspiring the awe and admiration of the entire world. Our power will stop all wars and bring a new spirit of unity to a world that has been angry, violent, and totally unpredictable.
That was Donald Trump's inaugural address from just over a year ago. And he is right. Europe, Russia, China, Latin America, they are all unified in their anger and hatred over President Trump's program. Whether it's threatening to invade Greenland, putting tariffs on enemies or allies alike, or just generally tearing up the global rulebook, a lot of the world is outraged against America. And Donald Trump has his reasons for doing that. I don't want today to get into whether those moves are wise or foolish. I think we can set that aside and just make the point that the rest of the world is clearly boiling over with anger and hatred against Donald Trump's America. President Trump isn't worried. The world's divided. America is the world's largest military power. It has a massive economy. Who cares? Well, the rest of the world does have options, and one of the most powerful and potent is an option America has handed them. Let's look at America's terminal addiction to debt and the power that it gives the rest of the world to strike back against America on today's Trumpet World.
Great powers have begun using economic integration as weapons. Tariffs as leverage, financial infrastructure as coercion, supply chains as vulnerabilities to be exploited.
Economies are weapons. That was a takeaway from Mark Carney's address at Davos, 1 year to the day after President Trump's inaugural address. America's massive economy is an asset, but it requires constant flows of supplies and loans to keep it going. Even when America's finances are good, the U.S. government has to borrow around $2 trillion a year. That's about 5 to 6% of GDP, just to cover the so-called structural deficit. You know, to cover Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the military, all of this spending. And the U.S. is often compared to a household, mortgaged to the hilt, maxed out on the credit card, and yet still borrowing more money every year just to make ends meet. That doesn't fully capture how dire the situation is. In a regular mortgage, you pay every month interest on that debt, but you're also paying off the mortgage. So that after however long the mortgage lasts for, whether it's 15 years or 25 years or 30 years, once that term of the mortgage expires, you are out of debt. You have paid off your mortgage. You own your house outright. But it is possible to get an interest-only mortgage. Then you just pay interest. And at the end of the mortgage term, well, suddenly the full amount that you borrowed comes due. If you borrowed $250,000 to buy a house, you might pay interest for 15 years. And then at the end of that time, you owe $250,000. And America has an interest-only mortgage, or rather many interest-only mortgages. So every year, America has to borrow to make ends meet. And like I said, the structural deficit is around $2 trillion. That's what that amount of money is. However, it also has to pay back debt that abruptly becomes due. And it does that by replacing the old loans with new loans, borrowing more money to pay back the old money. So as I said, last year, America borrowed nearly $2 trillion of new debt. But then when you add in the amount of borrowing that America did to pay back old loans, that figure shoots all the way up to $30 trillion. That's according to The Telegraph's Ambrose Evans Pritchard. That is a gargantuan sum of money. If the value of every good and service produced by the entire American economy, the money from every car manufactured, every haircut given, every meal served by all 350 million Americans for 365 days a year, you add all of that up, it's barely enough to pay off the old debts that became due last year and then to fund that new borrowing. To put that more formally, America's gross financing needs is about 100% of its GDP, its entire economy. Now, all economies operate this way, on this kind of interest-only mortgage type of model, but no other country has to borrow and then pay back debt on this vast scale. So 100% of its GDP for America, For France, that figure is 19%. For the UK, it's 10%. These countries are just as reliant as America is on debt to cover new spending. But they do not have to borrow to pay back the old debt at anywhere like the rate that America does. Now, other sources don't put this annual gross financing need as high as Pritchard does. There are different ways of calculating it. But still, even using those other measurements, it is far higher than other developed countries. The International Monetary Fund generally considers anything above about 20% risky. And it's easy to see why. If you think about the amount of money the US government took in, they took in $5.2 trillion in revenue last year. That is nowhere remotely enough to pay back all the loans that became due last year. You know, if America doesn't have the ability to borrow tens of trillions of dollars a year, the nation goes bankrupt in weeks. And actually, this situation is getting much worse fast because interest rates on American bonds are rising. You know, investors see US debt as a bit more risky than they used to see it. And so the government has to offer them a higher interest rate to get them to loan out their cash. And this is happening just whether or not the Federal Reserve raises or lowers interest rates, because it's about how much you need to pay to persuade investors to hand over money. And they're becoming increasingly skeptical about loaning money to the US. So last year, the US spent $1 trillion just on debt interest. So that's more than the nation spends on its military, just on its interest on its debt. That's forecast to almost double over the next decade. To try and fight this, the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, is resorting to pretty dangerous short-term tactics. It's tactics that he's criticized in the past, but I guess he feels like he doesn't have any other options. So he has various different ways of borrowing money. And if you think about debt that America promises to pay back in, say, 10 years, 20 years, or 30 years, that's going to have a higher interest rate compared to short-term debt. You know, if I'm going to loan America money and I'm going to get paid back in 30 years' time, I'm not going to get paid back until 2056. There's a lot that could happen between now and 2056. America could go bust. You have a world war and asteroid strikes. You know, just something huge and random that no one really predicts. So if I'm going to loan that money to America for 30 years, I'll want a higher interest rate to compensate me for that additional risk. Otherwise, I'd just loan it on a shorter-term basis. Short-term debt, though, is less risky. If I'm loaning the American government money and I'm getting it back next year, there's much less time for things to go wrong. And so what Bessent has been doing is he's been paying back long-term debt, but issuing more and more short-term debt. And this reduces the interest bill that America would otherwise have to pay. But it means that you're getting more and more loans becoming due every year. You know, more and more of these loans are expiring and needs to be paying back. So with each passing month, America becomes more and more reliant on this epic level of borrowing. And this is a glaring, obvious vulnerability, and the world sees it. This is what Deutsche Bank's head of currency research said while all the drama about Greenland was going on. For all its military and economic strength, the US has one key weakness. It relies on others to pay its bills via large external deficits. And then he went on to say, it's not clear why Europeans would be as willing to play this part. You know, President Trump is threatening trade war with the world. Deutsche Bank's expert is saying, well, why we're financing this. Why keep doing that? He went on to write, it's a weaponization of capital rather than trade flows that would be by far the most disruptive to markets. Europe could fight Donald Trump's tariffs with tariffs of their own and put tariffs on US goods, and they certainly have been threatening to take that approach. But Deutsche Bank is saying, well, actually a more effective approach is refuse to loan America money. And then America is going to be brought to its knees far more quickly. One financial institution, a Danish pension fund, has already taken action on this. They announced that they would sell U.S. Treasury bonds. Reporters brought this up to Scott Bessent. Here's how he responded to that threat.
How concerned are you that institutional investors in Europe may be pulling out of treasuries, such as from pension funds in Denmark and elsewhere?
Well, the size of Denmark's investment in U.S. Treasury bonds, like Denmark itself, is irrelevant. That it's less than $100 million. They've been selling treasuries for years. I'm not concerned at all.
So not particularly concerned. I mean, then again, if you are the US Treasury Secretary and you say, this is terrible, everybody panic, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're going to single-handedly crash the US economy overnight. So he kind of had to say that, I guess. But if it's just Denmark and if it's just a large pension fund in Denmark doing it, he's probably right. It's not really relevant. Sorry, Denmark. But you have a few countries join Denmark, and that doesn't stay relevant for very long. If you have China and Belgium and Canada, all major holders of US debt, start to join in, they start to have some power. You know, they start selling debt, you're going to force the US Treasury to pay a higher interest rate to borrow money. And America's borrowing could become completely unsustainable very quickly. And Mark Carney basically threatened this at Davos. Here's what he said.
The middle powers must act together, because if we're not at the table, we're on the menu.
And if press reports are anything to believe, discussions are going on in much more detail on this privately than in the public eye, like at Davos. So in December, the Wall Street Journal reported that European officials are privately discussing a coordinated dump of US Treasury bonds, how they can do maximum damage to the US and minimize the blowback that would then hit Europe and other countries. Ambrose Evans-Pritchard wrote this in The Telegraph a few weeks ago. The way to hold Trump's feet to the fire is for the whole world, Europe, China, Japan, Brazil, central banks, sovereign wealth funds, pension funds, insurance companies, and banks, to sit out the next auction by the US Treasury and see how easy it is for the US domestic capital market to cover debt sales running at $2.5 trillion a month. Impossible to coordinate? Yes, of course, but it's time to start floating such ideas in public. The only language Trump understands is money. So let's cut off his global credit card. And that is the way people are thinking. And as he points out, there are obstacles to that. It would cause a certain amount of pain to European economies and China and others. And they can prepare in advance to minimize some of that pain, but also they would have to be willing to accept some pain. So it may take some time before we see this, but Europe and the world is actively working, actively talking about this. And perhaps a good indication to show how serious the threat is that America is reacting. You know, Scott Bessent and others in the Trump administration, they may be complacent, but they're not idiots. You know, they see the danger here. They know that there's a danger here. They are proactively working to counter it. But not by reducing spending. America is too addicted to debt for that. Instead, you know, they're going around looking for a new drug dealer, an alternative source, so that their addiction can't be cut off by Europe. And one way that they've done this is with the Genius Act. This was a new law signed in July, and it's designed to open up a whole new market for US debt using cryptocurrency. So moving money internationally is expensive. Banks will charge very hefty fees to switch currencies and to move that money from one country to another. And this is one of the problems that cryptocurrencies, things like Bitcoin, were designed to solve. If you can move money around the world using Bitcoins, there are no middlemen to charge you extortionate rates for shifting that money. And they've certainly taken off in that role, but a big thing holding them back has been things like the fact that the currency value fluctuates wildly. And it's hard for companies to use Bitcoin in a way, you know, that conforms with accounting standards and regulations and things like that. One solution to this is so-called stable coins. So these are cryptocurrencies, but instead of, you know, Bitcoin, which goes up and down in value and has a complicated method of making new Bitcoins that also determines the value, instead, these remain pegged to dollars or some other currency or asset. And so one of these stable coins is always worth $1. And then you don't need to worry about currency fluctuations in the same way. Stable coins would have all of the upsides of crypto. You can move money from country to country, and none of the downsides. In theory. In practice, cryptocurrencies are generally unregulated, and you've had stable coins implode massively. You've had too many people all at once want to swap their virtual coin for real currency, and the coin's creators or traders run out of money the whole thing crashes down and people that thought they were investing in a stable asset lost everything. That's happened at least a couple of times already. The Genius Act aims to solve this. It allows institutions to issue stable coins in a way that is regulated by the federal government. So you've got more trust there and it's easier for businesses to use them. And then to ensure that there's no issues with people not being paid back, each stable coin has to be backed by US dollars or US treasury bond or some other acceptable liquid asset. And most in practice are going to choose treasury bonds. So this would offer a safe, regulated way to cheaply move money internationally. It's looking to prove really popular. And as these take off, you're going to give foreign investors and governments another reason to loan the US money. You know, the stable coin market, this regulated segment of it will funnel money directly into US debt. A few months ago, Eurointelligence wrote, "The planned issuance of stable coins will constitute a large and permanent expansion of US debt and lower interests in the US. We think that the recently passed Genius Act, which regulates the US domestic stablecoin industry, is one of the economically most consequential pieces of legislation in our time." They went on to say, "The big economic consequence is that they will allow the US government to borrow a lot more money." So, problem solved. The world's trying to cut America's credit card. America's found a new source of funding. Well, not really. The Genius Act doesn't solve America's addiction to debt, it enables it. At best, it buys America more time. But if you're just continually borrowing more money, you're getting another credit card as a temporary solution. At some point, you're going to max that one out too. It's also prompted Europe and others to accelerate their own crypto experiments that are more and more openly aimed at replacing the dollar or the dollar's role with these dollar-backed stablecoins. Now, if the Genius Act were buying America more time to reduce its spending and get rid of federal waste and get all the finances under control, I think it could be part of the solution. A genius part of the solution, perhaps. But there's no sign that the US government, under a man who's called himself before the king of debt, has any plans on doing that. Meanwhile, investors around the world are clearly watching America's rising debt load and are looking for alternatives. We saw this with gold briefly reaching an all-time high of $5,615.10 per troy ounce on January 29th. That's closely related to America's debt problems. If government debt gets too big, well, a government could go bankrupt. They could say, we're not paying that debt back. It's far more common for them to try and inflate that debt away. You encourage inflation and a debt of $30 trillion today, inflation takes off, that $30 trillion becomes a much less daunting prospect to pay off. And if you can do that in such a way where you're printing money that you can then use to pay that debt back as well, well, now you're reducing it in two different ways. So people buying gold as a sure sign, they fear inflation. That fear did subside and gold prices did come down a bit after President Trump announced that he wanted Kevin Warsh to succeed Jerome Powell at the Federal Reserve. Warsh is known as an inflation hawk. So this got rid of some fears of inflation. They believe that under Warsh, he might be able to curb inflation. There might not be that much he can do, though, because he's limited by this same all-consuming addiction to debt. And what Warsh has talked about is quantitative easing. And after the 2008 financial crisis and during COVID, the Federal Reserve launched a new experiment in quantitative easing. It basically printed money and then bought government bonds and a few other bonds, but mostly government bonds. It printed money and it loaned that money to the US government. And what Warsh wants to do is undo that. Okay, we loaned the money to the US government. We can now, when we've got these treasury bonds, we can sell these treasury bonds, get money back, and then burn the money, destroy the money. And that will help bring inflation under control. And when you look at the massive downsides of quantitative easing, the fact that it's played a major role in things like the stock market continuing to go up throughout the 2010s and certainly during COVID and house prices going up, but individuals themselves not really getting any richer. A big part of that is that's what quantitative easing does. People that have lots of assets, people that are already wealthy, it accelerates that wealth, but it doesn't do that much to somebody who is generally reliant on an income for their money. The big question is, though, can he follow through? Because doing this will make it more expensive for the US government to borrow money. You know, this is the opposite of the Federal Reserve loaning America money. They're instead almost competing with the Federal Reserve, giving back, selling bonds on the market for other people to buy instead of loaning the Federal Reserve money. It's going to make it harder for the government to finance its debt. They're going to have to raise interest rates more. And President Trump has been pretty aggressive on leaning on Jerome Powell, trying to get Jerome fired, putting a lot of pressure on him. Is he going to do the same thing to Walsh if American borrowing costs rise or just even don't fall? Yeah, we could see that. And you could see Walsh's program that's designed to try and bring down inflation being completely undermined by this addiction to debt. President Trump clearly wants to do everything possible to keep these doses of debt coming. Now, of course, we're not the only ones issuing this warning. Economist Peter Schiff, he had a great section on Fox News, I think just over a week ago. Here it is.
Central banks are buying gold.
They are.
To
they
back
are.
Up
that
their
is
currencies.
True.
They're getting rid of dollars. They're getting rid of treasuries. We are headed for an economic crisis, again, that will make the 2008 financial crisis look like a Sunday school picnic. We depend on the world. They provide us with the goods that we don't produce. They loan us the money we don't save. Trump has it backwards. The world economy doesn't work because of us. Our economy works because of the world. We have a dysfunctional consumer-based credit economy that rests on the foundation of the U.S. dollar's reserve currency status, and the world is now pulling the rug out from under the U.S. The dollar is going to collapse. The dollar is going to be replaced by gold. The biggest difference between the crisis that we're about to have and the one we had back then is this one is all in America. It's not going to be exported to the rest of the world. It's not a global financial crisis. It's an American financial crisis. The rest of the world is actually going to benefit.
It's a great point. He puts it really powerfully. I mean, that's just all of what we've been talking about. And this is matched exactly by the warning in the Bible. Now, your Bible has a lot to say about economic principles, financial laws, financial sin, unwise things, or even evil things that you can do to put yourself or your nation in financial jeopardy. And the situation America finds itself in, well, this is exactly what the Bible prophesies, what Herbert W. Armstrong prophesied, what Mr. Gerald Flurry has been talking about for years, what our Trumpet magazine has been talking about for years. In Proverbs 22 and verse 7, a very basic bit of wisdom on finances, it says the rich rules over the poor and the borrower is servant to the lender. While Donald Trump clearly believes the first part of that verse, America is rich. America does have a lot of wealth and is generally much richer than the rest of the world. So the rich rules over the poor, but we need to look at the second half too. A lot of that wealth is based on debt and the borrower is servant to the lender. You know, Donald Trump is trying to use that wealth to boss the world around, but actually America is a servant. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 44 gives a similar account. You know, in this passage, God lists a whole number of fearsome curses. One says, he shall lend to you and you shall not lend to him. Okay, you know, being indebted to foreign countries is a curse. They'll lend to you and you won't lend to them. Okay, well, why? That goes on to say, he shall be the head and you shall be the tail. You know, Donald Trump believes that America is the head. And he's going to find out that because of this debt, the United States is actually the tail. And as I said, we've been sounding this warning for years. Here's what Herbert W. Armstrong said about the role of a financial crisis and how it's going to change the world.
The present economic crisis threatens the very existence of the United States of America. Now, that statement ought to be thundered in banner headlines filling the whole upper half of the front pages of newspapers and also thundered out in newscasts. But this crisis, the financial crisis, is more serious than the world understands. It not only concerns the United States and Latin America, it is a world economic crisis. I was in London recently at the time of the economic summit of the most powerful nations. and I had meetings there with some of the heads of government. And I can tell you that they were even holding back a lot of the seriousness of the economic situation at this present time. What is happening can suddenly force a unification in Europe, a United States of Europe, that will produce a new world power, a world power colossus, perhaps larger than either the Soviet Union or the United States, and formed for the very purpose of destroying the United States of America. And that very fact is foretold in your Bible, in the prophecies of the Bible, believe it or not.
So you'll have a financial crisis in America that's going to trigger Europe uniting. Mr. Flurry has made similar points. Here's what he said in A Key of David a few years ago.
This debt is growing so fast that we're getting weaker by the seconds. And I mean, that's something we ought to be concerned about. So let me just take you to that scripture about the 10 kings, which ties us to Europe and their financial crisis. And it's all tied together. And what happens in America is going to intensely shake Europe in a negative way.
And think about this quote. This is from the 1995 Trumpet print. It says, "Soon there will be no one to buy our debt and bail us out, and then the United States will go into full bankruptcy." The article goes on to talk about how Europe, led by Germany, will see to it that not only is our credit card cancelled, but also that we do not keep our nation. The United States will be repossessed and taken away from us like an old car that the loan company drags down the street with a tow truck while the supposed owner runs screaming after it, but is unable to do a thing about it. And they made these warnings because they come right out of Bible prophecy. You know, Deuteronomy 28, it lists precisely the blessings that America was given from God that made it a great nation, a powerful nation, a wealthy nation. And then it lists the curses that are coming if America does not obey God. And these include besiegement, America being cut off from world trade, you're a victim of a brutal trade war, and then the weaponization of debt by foreign powers, like we've already quoted. And you'll read about exactly these same curses that are in Deuteronomy 28 in your newspapers. You can see them on Fox News. These are coming very quickly, and many will ignore these warnings because they've heard these warnings before. And sure, yeah, we've warned about America's debt, and it hasn't yet led to that kind of financial catastrophe that we've been talking about. It's certainly led America into a lot of trouble and a lot of hardship, and there have been downsides and curses that individuals in the nation as a whole, has experienced from these financial sins, but not that kind of collapse yet that Mr. Armstrong and Mr. Flurry and the Trumpet were writing about. But it will. It's coming. We don't necessarily know how long America can keep coming up with things like the Genius Act. You know, America can be genius at finding new ways to extend the debt, but it's coming. And of course, in today's interconnected world, many of the nations that America is in debt to are themselves in a whole lot of debt. The entire system is built on debt. The entire system is unsustainable. But America right now is uniquely indebted and uniquely hated. And that makes it uniquely vulnerable. I mean, ultimately, the whole system is going to fail. The Bible prophesies of a time where it will get so bad that even gold is thrown into the streets. You can't eat it. What's the use then? That is what it's going to take to get the world over its addiction to debt and breaking God's laws of finance and breaking all of the other of God's laws that we do so often, and finally build an economy and a world on a sure foundation. That world built on a sure foundation is coming. But of course, as we emphasize in the show, you can build your life now on that foundation. You can build your life around God's laws that lead to happiness and peace and joy and prosperity. And one of our booklets, I don't think we've mentioned on this show, or certainly not very much that we have that can help you do that, is Solve Your Money Troubles, that talks about God's laws of finance and how to keep those laws and how practically you can apply that in your life. It's a very practical book that can help you prepare for the time ahead and the economic crash that is coming. And, you know, I feel like I watch quite a few finance videos. It ends with them plugging their product, their course, their investment portfolio or something that they want you to buy and pay for. We're not selling the book. And like I said, we haven't really mentioned it that much before, but we'd be very happy to send it to you for free. I mean, just to give you an idea of what's in here, I mean, this is the table of contents: how to keep your job in a recession, how to save money during a recession, flee the credit trap, getting out of debt, an emergency crash course, investing for the future, plan your estate, finding joy during a recession. So you can read that online. We'd be happy to send you your own free print copy. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. Thank you to George Haddad for engineering and production. If you have any questions, any comments, you can get in touch with us. We're at trumpetworld@thetrumpet.com, or you can leave us a comment. You can like, subscribe, help us get this message out, help more people see the warning that we're working to give here. We'll have our regular Week in Review show on Friday. We'll be back then. Until then, keep watching your world.